Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osman here on KLBB, Club 1220. The next hour here with our good friend and all-knowing technician, producer.
you say more nice things than anybody else does. I like you, Tom.
One shot per show, and then we go straight to, you know, straight to hey, you.
That's how it usually goes.
How did Halloween go for you? Did you go to a lot of doors last night?
No. It's kind of awkward when you do that in an apartment building. Just doesn't work out so well.
Kind of get them all trapped there. You have to just go from, you know, every 2 feet, just knock on the door and bang on it, right?
You know, you try, but most people aren't happy to see you.
What was your costume this year?
I have a giant Viking helmet and beard attached, made completely out of wool. That's my costume.
How Minnesota can you get?
I know.
You know, we have an exciting show today. We actually have another trick-or-treater on the line here. Actually, no, it's Paul Douglas. Paul, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
How'd you do last night? Did you do pretty well?
Yeah, a lot of Baby Roots and the Snickers. And, you know, chocolate is good for you now.
It depends on what year it is.
And so is red wine.
Coffee.
And, I mean, whole milk is good for you now. And anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Well, you know, pretty soon cigarettes will be back as a health food, you know, pretty soon, right?
I think it's a major food group, yes.
You know, actually, I was reading somewhere that the tobacco taxes have been costing Minnesota a lot of jobs and a lot of income. I don't know, so are we saying cigarettes are good now? I don't know. I mean, candy cigarettes were banned years ago.
Good for you? No. Good for the economy? Maybe.
Yeah, I know.
Paul,
it's
we've
tough.
Been trying to get you on Flashback Twin Cities for a while, so I appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule to, you know, look away from the window and talk to us for an hour.
The Amish Doppler? Yeah.
How
I gaze out the Amish Doppler all the time.
How often does the Amish Doppler work better than the, you know, the sophisticated Doppler that I imagine you have one at home, right? Do you have a Doppler at home that you monitor all day long?
No. My wife would veto that. I'd love to have a Doppler at home, but I think the neighbors would rise up and, you know, unless we had, if we lived in a tent in the middle of the wilderness somewhere up north, no homes around. But even then, I mean, frankly, what the Weather Service has put up, there's no real need to duplicate. They've done a really good job and spent a lot of money providing national coverage. You know, a few gaps in the coverage here and there, but by and large, it's a pretty impressive network of very powerful Doppler radars. So, you know, could you get in there with your own Doppler? Yeah, I guess you could. But, how much better is the forecast going to be? Probably not worth the extra $750,000 to $5 million. And that's at the low end.
That's a little capital.
What it would cost. Yeah. It's a big money expense. And no, I have not convinced my wife to buy a Doppler.
But you're working on it. In fact, Tom, I'm going to go right away here to a clip here. I like to play these clips here on tcmedianow.com. And this is actually, it's very weather and Doppler related.
It's just weather. It can strike at any time. This season's severe weather has made Doppler radar a very hot topic. I'm Paul Douglas.
News 11 believes it's essential that the Twin Cities be served by a single weather source, the National Weather Service. That's why News 11 joined in to make Doppler radar possible. This new radar will allow forecasters to pinpoint potentially dangerous storms within the metro area. A hotline will give us access to this critical information. And the use of the Twin Cities Doppler is just days away.
There you go.
Oh, I love those sound effects.
Wow.
We laugh now, but those graphics, I'm sure, say the art. It's a bit Atari 2600 now when you look at it.
It's amazing how far the graphics have come. But, it can always be better. The forecasts have improved somewhat. It can always be better. There's no question about that, Tom. But the technology has been a big part of that story. And you know, the reality is Doppler radar is saving lives every year. And the investment is paying off. So can't do much to stop the storms, but I mean, everybody now, when I travel, I see people checking Doppler on their smartphones, and most people still weren't doing that 5-10 years ago, but now we've all become this nation of armchair meteorologists, and we second guess the local TV weather guys and gals, and we think, hey, you know, there's enough information out there, I can get my own forecast, and you know, many days that works pretty well.
You know, not only are we armchair journalists or armchair photographers, you're right, weather is something that between us hardy Minnesotans who think we can predict weather by our experience, by the Farmer's Almanac, and by using our smartphones and technology, everyone becomes an expert. And you, of all people, have and I understand you love technology, much like myself, and you've really embraced the use of technology and really embraced the advances of technology and weather forecasting, but also just experience and knowing what to expect from Minnesota or anywhere else.
Well, you gain a feel over time. Every meteorologist thinks their hometown is the hardest place in America to forecast for. I'm sure there must be a guy in San Diego or Phoenix who feels the same way, although I wonder what those people do all day. But there's no question that the weather is amplified, modified by local effects, proximity to water, proximity to terrain, mountains nearby. So you have a lot of local factors. And so we get into an area called micrometeorology, where the weather can vary. Literally, you go from block to block, and it's slightly different. And that's what makes this such a challenging matrix, Tom, is that everybody really should have their own forecast based on where they're located, their exact GPS location, and what they care about, what's in their calendar, what's in their upcoming to-do list. And I think that's where we're heading, where everybody will, in essence, have their own personalized weather channel available anytime, anywhere. Kind of like Siri for Apple fans, Siri only tailored for meteorology.
I like that Siri can change voices. I want to make sure when I have my forecast, I want a different Siri voice. I want maybe, we can get, maybe Paul, maybe get your voice on the Siri system and you can provide a personal forecast to everyone.
Scary Paul. No, they don't want to hear me.
Paul, I want to take a step back here. Let's go back 31 years, 1983. You're working at the Satellite News Channel in Stanford, Connecticut, correct?
That is correct.
Which to some of our listeners who may not know, that was the precursor to headline news. It was a international satellite, this innovative idea of having news by satellite that cable operators could pick up. 24-hour news was only about 2 or 3 years old through Ted Turner's CNN. You were doing various shifts, international TV, but you made the choice to come to what was then a pretty low-rated NBC affiliate in Minneapolis, WTCN-TV. What
right.
What brought you from the comforts of the East Coast to flyover land?
Fire release.
Good answer.
No, I kid you not. When I came out from my interview, they took me to the Orion Room, then at the top of the IDS, had a very nice lunch. And then they took me around Lake of the Isles, and I saw Mary Tyler Moore's pad, and that was very nice. And then they took me to the Byerly's in St. Louis Park. That sealed the deal. I had never been to the Twin Cities before. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I thought any community that has a grocery store like this has to be doing something very, very right. And
you thought, I can't have
true.
A full restaurant and a grocery store in the same building? Where am I?
Well, and the art store. I think at the time, I don't know if they still have the art exhibit.
I think they do.
Where am I? Holy cow. I mean, we had grocery stores out east, but nothing like that. I thought, wow.
What month did you come, Paul? What month was it when you did your interview?
I came out in March. So was it March? Boy, that's a great question. I'd have to go
so
back.
So it wasn't completely freezing at the time.
It wasn't Halloween blizzard that day.
No.
Because we have and we have a lot of people that have come and gone from the Twin Cities, and they always have this very either they came when it was July, they thought this is how it is all year round, or they came
right.
in the middle of a snowstorm and they thought, well, how bad can it be?
How bad can it be?
I think the rumor was David Letterman. He interviewed for Channel 9. He came the day of a snowstorm and saw fences and medians down, and he thought this can't be worth the due weather here in Minnesota. And the rumor is that the Channel 9 station manager, and this is all just a rumor, a legend, said you'll never do weather in this town again. Well, he went to LA and did he did okay, I think.
It was a good change.
Yeah. But you came in 1983, and you came to what was then a pretty low rated station. Had gone
yeah, WTCN.
Ownership.
I think Leave It to Beaver reruns were beating us at 10 o'clock. I think we were fifth out of four stations. It was pretty bad. But I knew that Gannett was coming in, and Gannett had and has a good track record for investing in great technology and great people. And I thought, okay, well, that's good. And I also knew that they had the secret ingredient, this mystery guy, this brother of Ron Majors, who was and is adored still to this day across much of the state, this unknown by the name of Paul Majors. And had a chance to meet him, and I thought, I think this could work.
You told me
this could be fun.
You told me about a conversation we had previously that they told you we had a secret weapon. We had a weapon that's gonna take us to number one. Paul Majors. It worked, but I wouldn't say just by Paul Majors, but by a lot of the investment in, first of all, in stories and also in weather. I think that weather became a big part of Channel 11.
They invested and they took me up on my harebrained scheme of outdoor weather. That's one I wish I could take back. All the nights I was tortured out there since, and I feel bad for all the other TV meteorologists. Hey, yeah, that backyard weather thing did okay in Minneapolis. Maybe it'll work in Charlotte.
And let's talk about that a second, though, because you were a young guy. You come into
I was a young guy.
You were
a long time ago.
Always a young guy, but you come into a new job, and then hey, do you mind if we cut out a wall? Here in the TV studio, and let me forecast from outside. I think right now, because right now we're Tom and I here work at this radio station, and I think if we were to ask our owner to cut out a wall, start doing broadcasts outside, we might be outside pretty quickly. It was a pretty bold move now on their part to, and it worked, but did you come up with the idea and present to them saying, okay, backyard weather, this will work?
Yeah. Again, keep in mind we were fifth. the bar was set pretty low. So at that point, you can try things that the other established, mature competitors in town wouldn't dream of doing. That's the beauty of being the outsider, the also-ran, the crazy uncle we don't talk about. You can take more risk, and that's what Gannett was willing to do. And in terms of the outdoor weather thing, I did it in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton. Right after I graduated from Penn State, I worked for 3 years in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, which had a great, great local station. It's still one of the best ABC affiliates in the country, WNEP. They get 50, 60 shares of the audience. And this was just a fabulous place. And I got there, and the weatherman was standing outside in front of a shed. And this was still back in the days of magnetic symbols. And eventually, fairly quickly, we upgraded to a green chroma keys, and we started using these very, very nasty-looking computer graphics. But this was 1982, and it worked. People loved it. People like to see the weather guys suffer.
That's definitely true.
There's something cathartic about it. And as the news director so eloquently told me, he said, Paul, he said, we know it's weather forecasting, it's meteorology. You're going to screw up. But at least if you're standing outside, you'll get the current weather right. And I thought, well, thank you.
You mentioned that. I don't know why I just thought to myself when I watched you over the years, somehow I enjoyed it when it was raining and you had the umbrella out in the backyard. I don't know why I enjoyed that you had an umbrella up. Well, we're looking at a computer graphic, obviously they're a chroma key, but you're outside and you can see raindrops. I like that.
Well, we're storytellers. We're scientists, we're meteorologists, but in the end, it all comes down to stories. We're hardwired to respond to stories. We have been since our caveman days, sitting around a campfire. And, the technology has changed, but the story remains the same. And how do you make that story relevant to people? And that's where some of this new technology really is going to be very exciting. When you get weather built into your navigation system in your vehicle and can see what's moving in and have plenty of opportunity to avoid severe weather, not drive into hailstorms or floods, know that there's accumulating snow 10 miles ahead, those kinds of things. I think we're just really scratching the surface with what's possible and how you can personalize weather for consumers and also for business, and that's where we're more focused now on tailoring weather for businesses and helping them operate profitably, efficiently, safely, keeping their people, their customers safe. But, you know, about $45-50 trillion is the global GDP, and about a third of business is very dependent on weather,
right,
very sensitive to weather.
Right.
So that's the direction we're going right now.
Well, especially after even a weather year, and it wasn't just Minnesota, but everywhere where, you know, snow and cold, you know, kept a lot of businesses closed. It affects the trucking, it affects oil prices, it affects everything. I mean, everything gets affected in some way by weather. You know, and of course, we as consumers or we as individuals, we tend to look at it from, you know, I have to shuffle my driveway before I go to work, you know, in the morning. But the global effect, as you talk about, there's a great number of international, if not national, issues that come up from poor weather. Or at least inconvenient weather.
There's no question. Transportation, supply chain, logistics. I mean, weather is the pond in which we live, right? It affects everything. It affects our commutes. It affects the food we put on our table. It affects our leisure time. And, you know, how we dress, in many cases, how we feel. It affects our moods. Many of us are walking, talking barometers, very sensitive to small changes in pressure and sunlight. And so, you know, we've created these environments where we're expected to perform at, you know, peak capacity with fluorescent lights. And even though there's not much light outside, and we wonder why we feel perpetually depressed or anxious or sleep deprived. You know, I think we were meant to slow down a little bit in the winter, but I have yet to meet anybody who has the luxury of being able to slow down at all these days, right?
Paul Douglas, our guest today. We'll be right back here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB Club 1220. Our guest, Paul Douglas. Has this fascinated you from a young age? We've talked extensively in the past, and we've done an interview in the past, but I want to talk a little bit about when you were growing up in Scranton, which, by the way, you can actually see some of Paul's early work on WNEP on tcmedianow.com. You can check that out. Was weather a big part of your life growing up, something you always thought about, something you wanted to just be part of, wanted to be ahead of?
Yeah, I mean, and I grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is between Philly and Harrisburg, the Amish country, Amish Dutch, Pennsylvania Dutch, fabulous people. We lived in a typical middle-class subdivision. On the other side of the stream in our backyard was an Amish farm, and, you know, they'd be up at 4 or 5 o'clock every morning milking the cows. Incredible work ethic. Went to bed at sunset, but really stuck together, and family meant everything. Family really was number one. So I feel blessed to have been, you know, growing up in that part of the country. And 1 year, 72, Tropical Storm Agnes did a big loop. It stalled over Pennsylvania, came inland, and it just sat there. And we got 20 inches of rain. It flooded out our house. And I remember that trauma, you know, that dislocation and the reaction of my parents. And, I mean, it was a pretty big deal, you know, swimming around in my basement, literally, trying to plug up a massive leak. Cold, muddy water was just pouring into the house. So, you know, that really set me off. And I just started reading more articles about hurricanes and weather forecasting, severe weather, which sort of led to a career in meteorology. And I think a lot of people on television, a lot of people in the business were traumatized as kids by something, a blizzard, a tornado, a flood. Something put the fear of God in them. And, you know, you start gathering information about what happened to you. And in the process, it dawns on you that, hey, this is pretty interesting stuff. And again, you've got really two major challenges, Tom. The first is actually predicting the weather, predicting the future. How many people, except for stockbrokers and economists, predict the future for a living every day and are graded every day on their forecasts. So you've got that intellectual challenge of trying to come up with a decent forecast consistently. The second challenge is communicating it. You've got this image in your mind of what the sky will look like tomorrow and the rough chronology, but communicating that into a narrative that people actually want to hear and is interesting, that's another challenge. And sometimes that can be the bigger challenge, how you communicate certain threat levels when it comes to tornadoes. You know, you don't want to hype the tornado, but I'd rather get a call from somebody saying, hey, Paul, you hyped that storm, than get the call, hey, Paul, why weren't you on the air? The tornado hit our house. There was no warning.
And Paul Douglas, our guest today, I think I would venture to say, Paul, that you probably get more grief probably from people than stockbrokers or other people or economists.
Just and what I was thinking, too.
I think, I mean, really, I've seen, I mean, I've read the, you know, StarTribune.com. I've heard talk radio. I'd say the meteorologists probably get more immediate reaction negatively than probably those that have made very poor stock, giving poor stock tips to people with their money.
Well, again, I used to tell Don Shelby, I said, look, Don, I respect what you do, but be honest. You could dress up a monkey in a sport coat to tell people what already happened. I mean, really? I mean, okay, you go on the air tonight with me, Don, and predict what the headline is going to be tomorrow night. You know, what's going to happen over the next month or two with the election cycles and who's going to win and why? I said, you know, let's be on a level playing field. I'd love to go on the air and just say, oh,
it rained
yesterday's
today.
High was 76. The low this morning was 38. Back to you.
How did he take it when you said this to him?
He was not amused.
I don't see Don being very amused by that comment. As someone who's met Don, I don't see that. I see him being humored by that remark.
I just wanted to use the phrase "monkey in a sport coat."
You know, if you text it, then it's in your vocabulary in your phone forever. Which I found when you text a very odd phrase, and then all of a sudden it comes an auto type. When did I write that? I'm going to put monkey in a suit because I want to make sure that's on my auto type when I text this to other
monkey in a sport coat.
A sport coat, sorry, because it's going to get good guests on this show if I start referring to them as monkeys in sports coats.
I don't know why I can visualize that. That's what's sad. I find it funny.
I'm one step ahead of you. Actually,
some of the bosses I used to have.
Well, we won't.
They were monkeys in a sport coat.
We won't go there. They're probably listening to this podcast probably too. I want to, Paul. This wouldn't be an interview if we didn't bring up one of my traumatic events as a kid. There's two of them that come to mind, three of them. One wasn't as traumatic as the other two. July 18th, 1986. I'm sure you get questions on this all the time.
The amazing flood. The tornado.
This is actually probably my most viewed video that I have on tcmedianow.com.
I've had right. About 86. 86 was the, of course, the Brooklyn Park Springbrook Nature Center tornado. 87 was the mega flood that hit the South Metro.
Let's take a listen here of some audio from July 18th, 1986.
Now, from the action center of the Twin Cities, News 11 with Paul Majors, Kirsten Lindquist, Jeff Passolt on sports, and meteorologist Paul Douglas.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to toss all formality out the window right now. Just moments ago, we had some amazing pictures from Sky 11.
Incredible pictures.
Of a tornado moving around. Paul Douglas is right over here right now to bring us up to date. Paul?
Okay. Paul and Kirsten, we want to update you. A tornado warning has been issued for extreme southern portions of Anoka County and northern Ramsey County. Here is the storm that is producing a tornado. This is all hail and very heavy rain. It appears the tornado is right about here in the vicinity of Brooklyn Park. Specifically, this would be in the Brooklyn Park, Anoka, Coon Rapids area near Blaine, Spring Lake Park, Lino Lakes. Those are towns in the immediate path of this tornado. Do we have live video from Sky 11? Max Mesmer is our Sky 11 pilot, and he is currently up in the vicinity of Brooklyn Park. There was a reported touchdown in Brooklyn Park at 85th and Zane just a few short moments ago. As you can see, there is the tornado. It is indeed on the ground. You can see debris being tossed up, and we want to go live to Max Mesmer.
hundreds of feet in the air. There are flash fires on all the high-tension wires. We're about three-quarters of a mile from the actual touchdown at this time. This is really spectacular.
Max, based on what you've seen, what do you estimate the damage to be in the Brooklyn Park area? I mean, obviously this is causing damage.
Another touchdown. I'm going to have to leave this area here. The debris is drifting my way here.
Please do, Max. Please do not endanger yourself.
Max, please do not fly into the tornado.
Yeah, Max actually was a very safe pilot, but he used to fly air rescue off the Matterhorn in Switzerland. He rescued mountain climbers off the mountain, which is tricky to do in a helicopter, and he also flew in Vietnam. So his definition of danger was a little different than the rest of our definitions of danger.
I don't know if he's on this for...
Great story, Tom. At one point, Majors... And we're all kind of in shock. I mean, we're looking at each other off camera, shrugging, because there is no script for this. There's never been an entire newscast devoted to a tornado on the ground happening in real time. This is before Doppler. I mean, we had radar, but it was pretty rudimentary compared to what we have now. So we didn't have all the different scans, and we couldn't zoom in, and we didn't have the resolution. And I was scared that this thing was going to plow right into a neighborhood live and that we would witness carnage and stuff that nobody wanted to see. That was one of my concerns. The other concern was Max flying into this thing, trying to get so close that he would get sucked into the rotation of the tornado. He insisted he was about a quarter, half a mile away. At one point, Majors asks him, "Hey, Max, where are you?" And Max says, "Stand by." And he actually drops down to treetop level and reads a street sign. And then heads back up and reestablishes contact and gives, you know, the exact address. "I'm at the corner of Zexis and Zane." And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And he got spanked by the FAA for that.
Oh, but the trophies and awards and pictures and video that came back to Channel 11 in the days after, I'm sure it made up for the for the fine that probably was imposed on Max. It was really I watched it live, and you talk about those traumatic moments as a kid. This is a moment that I watched live. We lived in northern Ramsey County, where the path of the tornado. Luckily, it never made it out of Fridley, Brooklyn Park, for it to come to my neighborhood. But we watched this live, and I can't say for honesty if we had ever watched Channel 11 or if we were watching the show but preceding it. But we watched it for the full half hour, and it was amazing that the tornado was kind of started, was at peak, and stopped all within a half hour for
right.
TV. And plus, as you talked about when I wrote this item for MinnPost, which you can look up by the way online. That it really was stationary for a long time during the duration of this broadcast. It was kind of a tornado made for TV.
It was almost like it was posing for the camera. And, I mean, it was just pure luck. I'd like to be able to sit here and say, "Oh, Tom, we planned for this. We had drills and we prepared." No. Tom Empey, the photographer, and Max Mesmer were on their way to another story, I think in Monticello. And they, as they were literally buzzing up 94... Max Mesmer, the pilot, saw the funnel forming, and he radioed back to the station, "Hey, I think we have a funnel cloud." And Max, was in the right place at the right time with a chopper, and we just happened to be beta testing a new gyro zoom lens for the camera, for the television camera that the photographer Tom Empey had. So he had this state-of-the-art, brand spanking new $20,000 special lens so that when you zoom in, it wouldn't wobble and jiggle all over the place. It was basically, correcting that jitter. And so that's why the pictures were so compelling. We were, I think, one of the first stations in America to be testing it out. And so it all just came together. And I think it really did help Channel 11's credibility. The fact that, CCO, and I can say this because I worked there and I heard the stories from the people at CCO. At one point, they ordered their a helicopter pilot into the air to, you know, so that they wouldn't be scooped by CARE 11. And the helicopter pilot, to his credit, said, "No way, you're not paying me enough. That ain't going to happen."
You know, so, in fact, I recall, because I get these videos. People, you know, tape little segments and they do send them to me. And I do have very small parts in 4 and 5 that day. They are licking their wounds that day because they're trying to tell everyone, "Well, you see, we have this Doppler that shows us where the tornado might be." Well, Paul, you guys had video of it for a half hour live from a helicopter.
Yeah, it seemed like we were everywhere. And I'll never forget, like, the next day or 2 days later was the torchlight parade. and the managers at 11, they were brilliant. I mean, I really give these guys a lot of credit for taking risks. And then when something is working, you know, pour on the gasoline. But they literally put Max Mesmer and the chopper and the photographer, Tom Empey, on a float. They had their own flatbed truck, and they went right down Hennepin and got, you know, standing ovation. People were screaming. I mean, it was great marketing because a lot of those people had watched the footage from, you know, the previous day.
I think the only other tornado that really would hit home would be the 65 tornado, which actually did have death and lots of damage. Well, that and the Maple Grove tornado the next year. Yeah, that tornado, I think, because so many kids watched that. It was summertime. Kids were off school. A lot of people watched that, and they didn't watch it when it was on. The video replayed in the days subsequent to that. I can watch a video today. I can watch it right now in November, and it's still as scary and as fascinating as it was the day I saw it live.
Yeah, we got a lot of requests from universities, from researchers who wanted access to the raw video, you know, the high resolution video from the camera itself, because you could really see the circulation. It wasn't a dirty tornado. It didn't kick up a lot of debris. As you may recall, it almost had that ghostly white.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is hypnotizing and, you know, in a weird way, a beautiful, you know, formation when you get right down to it. But they were able to track some of the trees. This thing pulled trees out like you would pull out a weed in your garden. It just yanked them out by the roots. And by tracing, they could use telemetrics and trace the actual track of these entire trees suspended up in the air. And by doing so, they could calculate the wind speed and the updraft and the downdrafts. And so they were really, you know, this video, I think, really did help to advance the state of the science from everything I understand. And I was just a bewildered spectator. Every time the video would go down the feed from CARE 11, from Sky 11, every time that the feed went down, they would come to me and I'd, you know, deer in the headlights. Paul, talk about your Doppler. Talk about your radar.
Calm us down,
tell
please.
Tell us about tornadoes.
I like when you have the phone, and I think in 6 o'clock you have the phone out. That's when you really know that you're getting some up-to-date information, when you actually have the wired telephone up on
the bad phone.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
The red phone. Yeah, I was talking with North Moscow.
Well, tear down the wall. Our guest today, Paul Douglas. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with Paul Douglas here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest, Paul Douglas. Paul, what is your website right now? If people want to go and check out the latest forecast or check out what you're doing?
Well, I guess, you know, I'm doing a few, but Star Tribune would probably be the site where I try to mix not only the forecast itself, but articles that got my attention and maps and graphics and links, other university sites, links. Basically, my goal is to give sort of a little chronology of what I did the previous day and the stories, the weather stories, climate stories I found interesting, and some of the links to websites or apps that I personally like, for what it's worth. And so telling the story with kind of a Minnesota perspective, but branching out from there into other stories. So, you know, StarTribune.com, Conservation Minnesota is another site in town that I update every day, the St. Cloud Times. We launched a weather channel called Weather Nation, and that is still going strong. We launched that back in 2011. We're actually moving in a slightly different direction now, more towards big data and analytics, and I'm real excited about that.
You've always been, as just a meteorologist, and I think this is one of the reasons why you've, you know, and I call everyone survivors who's able to do what they like to do, you know, the course of their career. You've always been what I think kind of one step ahead or looking toward the future, even as you're, you know, providing a forecast. You were innovative with, you know, graphic weather with Channel 11. You were, I believe, if I remember correctly, you were working at the station and then working also at home and working in between newscasts on your company. And then
right.
also any the technology to provide weather forecasts and what was GPS systems at the time. And then you took that to Chicago for a bit, and then we were fortunate enough to have you come back here in 1997. And then,
yeah, I've always had something on the side. I mean, I've always been fascinated with entrepreneurs and just, you know, experimenting, just throwing stuff against the wall. I'm the idea guy. I'm the how hard would it be guy, and. I don't know. I just part of it is I like the independence, not having a boss. Not, you know, I've had a lot of bosses over the years. Some of them were good, some of them were not. And
how are you as a boss? Are you the best boss
about
you've
having
had?
Your own company? Huh?
Are you the best boss you've had?
There are days I'd like to fire myself. Really, and the thing about being an entrepreneur, people. You know, if and when you sell a company that you've poured your guts into for X years, you know, that makes headlines and people see the numbers and they get starry-eyed.
Right.
They have no concept of what it takes to actually launch a business, run a business, make payroll. You know, it's interesting. Managing people, you know, managing ideas is actually a little bit easier than managing people some days. But if you've got great people and you're flexible and you're tenacious and you're creative, but especially flexible, you've got a shot because it never, ever turns out the way you think it's going to turn out. And I think that's kind of the way life is. You think you're going one direction, but nope, you're meant to go over here.
And Paul, you're still providing a weather forecast on Weather Nation, correct, on 11.2?
Yes, yeah, we are involved in that. I am no longer on the air. I've reached the age where they've asked me to, would you please step aside, sir?
Bud Kraling is still doing it. He's 96. He's still doing forecasts.
I don't want to be that guy who's, you know, 73 and somebody taps him on the shoulder. Hey, yeah, Paul, it's time to give it a rest. But I'm always going to love the weather. I'm passionate about meteorology, and you know the intersection of technology and meteorology is really where I like to hang out. And I admire anybody who's passionate about anything. And you know, people who look at what they do as art as opposed to drudgery. Work. And, you know, what I do is work many days, too. I do a lot of stuff I don't like to do. But for me, it's just a joy to be able to compare the models and try to outwit the models and try to figure out, you know, what to bet on. It's a little like gambling in that you've got all these horses, and which horse is going to cross the finish line first? And each horse has its own story, has its own strengths and weaknesses. You know, that day, which one are you going to bet on?
You know, go ahead.
No, I'm rambling now. So please interrupt me.
I just had a quick question. You know, you think about, you keep hearing stories about how news is not being watched nearly as much as it used to be. Jobs are being lost all over the place. But people will always have a fascination with the weather. I mean, is the weather side of the news as affected as the rest of the news? It really is, you know?
It is. I mean, you know, established what I would call legacy media, mm-hmm. television, radio, newspapers, magazines, it's challenging out there. I mean, everybody is fighting for the same ad dollar spend, and with so many options now, many of them digital, and younger people seeming to prefer, you know, getting their information on demand, in many cases through social media, it definitely puts a strain on all established media to be creative and to reinvent. And that can be hard. You know, I don't care what business you're in. If you're not trying to reinvent yourself, if you're literally not trying to cannibalize your own business model, you're in trouble because somebody else will do it for you.
Well, how do you maintain a separation from all the other places? Like the regular news, you will have choices of stories. Each news department will pick which stories they want, and they could be different from the other stations, but the weather is the weather. You know, everybody here in the Twin Cities is going to hear the same kind of weather. How do you keep people, you know, tuning into yourself versus going somewhere else?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the overall accuracy, the trust level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Minnesotans are sharp. They know who, you know, they have their favorites. And I what is that based on? I don't know. I hope it's based on a combination of accuracy and communication skills. And can this person make the weather relevant? Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I used to complain to Paul Majors that they should have the theme from Mission Impossible playing behind me because, you know, this feed is going live over pretty much the entire state, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions, most of central and southern Minnesota, western Wisconsin. Right. And there will be huge variations in weather, just even across the metro some days. So the fact that somebody sitting up in Brainerd or, you know, La Crosse or the suburbs of Eau Claire gets the same forecast that somebody in Bloomington or Edina or Roseville gets is criminal, because it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, in some cases, radically different. And that's the challenge. And how do you leverage the power of the Internet to tailor the weather stream so that everybody gets something a little bit different based on where they live? So that I'm not getting, up in Brainerd, I'm not getting the same forecast that the guy in Bloomington is getting. And I think that we're just, again, scratching the surface of what will happen as all these different media types converge.
Mm-hmm. And, Paul, I think that, you know, you've been in Minnesota a long time now, and you and I both have lived in Chicago in the past. The difference between, I think, Minnesota and other markets, and you asked about the Phoenix and the San Diego meteorologists. Those are the guys that are still doing stand-up comedy on Saturday night, I think, and they're doing the weather on Monday, Friday.
Right.
It's a different job. We do on Flashback Twin Cities, probably half of our stories from back in the day are weather related. The blizzard of Halloween, which was in 1991, the superstorm, even the North Minneapolis tornado, the 65 tornado. Yep. There's so much of our history has been based upon weather and the weather effects. In our news audience here, and you know this probably from working both 11 and 4, and people having their favorites and having people that they look to or that are part of the family, as Dave Moore once said, you know, we are a different – we are I don't say a higher falutin, but we are have a higher standard of what information we're getting. And I think that that's why – and you correct me if I'm wrong – you probably stuck around as long as you have, and you're still part of, you know, part of Minnesota, even though you're an East Coast guy. You know, weather's really part of our DNA, and we talk about it nonstop, every week, every day, every moment. And especially if you have someone you don't know what to say to them, like, well, the weather's sure pretty good or pretty bad.
Exactly. Everybody has a weather story. After 31 winters, I consider myself a Minnesotan. My two sons were born here. I mean, this is home. This is where our friends are. This is where we want to stay. And I lived outside of New York for a year, lived in Chicago for 3 years. You know, America has a lot of great cities and great options. But in terms of, and this sounds cliche, but it is true. a place where you want to raise your kids, you know, a place that has the balance, that has the culture that you want, and yet the privacy that you need, the ability to get away on the weekends, the whole lakes thing. You know, it took us a few years to really figure out the whole up north cabin thing. But once we figured it out, it was like, okay, now we get it. Yes, we understand. Get out of your bubble. You know, it's a chance to reunite with family and friends and loved ones out of your typical bubble. And once we figured that out, it was like, okay, now we understand why so many Minnesotans stay and don't flee south, because, you know, the summers and even the falls are so phenomenal. But the other thing I really appreciate about the state is that people embrace the weather no matter what the weather. You know, you see crazy people out running when it's 15 below.
Not me, but
these people would would be hospitalized. I mean, if you try that out east, you know, they take you to the happy home. But you know, Minnesotans are hardy, and I think that kind of thumb your nose at old man winter, that mindset carries over into the work ethic. And just the sense of humor that I think, you know, so many people up here have. You have to have a sense of humor just to
get through it,
survive.
You know, we were talking a few weeks ago on the show that no matter what your political affiliation is, no matter what your differences with someone, when someone's car is stuck, you know, in a ditch, everyone comes out. Everyone helps them out. I think when I lived in Chicago, if my car had been stuck, people have been honking, laughing at me, or, you know, trying to nudge me out of my parking spot. It's just a different place. And not to debar Chicago. Chicago was a great place. I just prefer to live here, because, you know, if someone's home is damaged, someone gets flooded, you know, the neighbor's the first one with the hose to come, you know, hose you out. It's just part of Minnesota, and weather brings us together in more ways than one. And even when, you know, out of despair from these disasters that happen, whether it be as small as, again, as a, you know, getting your driveway plowed in or your car stuck, people come out and they help you.
They do. And you see that Minnesota nice thing is real. I mean, trust me, I just got back from Washington, D.C. Nobody talks about D.C. nice or Philadelphia nice. And I grew up in that area and still love that part of the country. But, again, there's an innocence out here, but it's a pragmatic innocence. And the people love their weather. They know their weather. You can't get away with, just faking it, phoning it in. And that's what I really respect about Minnesotans. I mean, you really have to know your stuff, or you can get into a lot of trouble out here. But some days I wish I'd gotten a real job, you know. But most days I'm grateful that I'm able to do what I love, and I would wish that for any of your listeners as well. That Try to find ways to do what you enjoy. We're only here for so long, and do what makes you happy.
Well, if you miss seeing yourself, Paul, or if you're missing Paul Douglas, go to tcmedianow.com. You can watch many newscasts over the last 30 years. Paul appears in, plus the Early Tornado. We have coverage of the Halloween Blizzard. We have coverage of your Nightline appearance. We have your WNEP appearance. And by the way, thank you again, Paul, for the generosity in video for tcmedianow.com. So, Paul, you can be watched anywhere in the world online. And if you really want to see bad weather, you can see Paul reporting on bad weather. If you want to see good weather, we have that too. The backyard, I have the Best of the Backyard video online. There's some great stuff. I have the canoe video online. It's not good radio,
canoe.
It's great video. So if you want to see the canoe.
They will show that at my funeral.
Paul, thank you so much for being at Flashback today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next Saturday here in Flashback Twin Cities. Again, thank you, Paul Douglas, here on KLBB Club 1220.